Audio Drama Production Podcast, Episode 38, Getting Stuff Done and Working with a Composer.
The Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name is Robert and I'm with my colleague Matthew.
Good day, and it is daytime for once, not like the last couple of weeks where we've recorded at the back of 10, 11 o'clock at night. Not quite my time, more your time.
Yes, that's right, and we're recording between 3 and 4 today when normally I'd be having a little nap, 15 minutes to myself, but you know, we've got to try all the different angles, haven't we?
Yeah, it's the time difference thing, so it's catering for the international community of listeners, recording at all different types of the day, so that we hit people at, you know, all the sort of right times for them. That's the way I've convinced myself anyway, that this is working, so.
Yeah, we're in a global network that's, the world's never been smaller, I guess, thanks to the internet. I read that somewhere, so.
Well, if you're a new listener, sorry about that. This is actually the Audio Drama Production Podcast, a show about audio drama production, funnily enough. And we live online at a website called audiodramaproduction.com.
That's right. And there's always the Facebook as well, the Facebook group, Audio Drama Production Podcast. Is that the full name of it? Yeah, it is.
That's the one.
And we're on there a lot as well. So we're looking at getting stuff done. Now, what does that mean exactly?
I think we've all had this issue at some point where life gets in the way. You're trying to tell stories. You're trying to create audio drama, whether you're trying to write a script or produce a show or record, whatever you're doing. There's all these other things in your life, your job, your family. It could be really difficult sometimes to find the time to actually sit down and do work, you know, and make stuff and get it out, because it's a big long process. So how do we find the time? How do we make the time to get stuff done? And it was actually a chat with Jack Ward of the Sonic Society, a show that's been going for many years now, and he knows everything there is to know about audio drama, so decided to get Jack on and have a chat about that. As well as working with a composer, that's something that sort of came up recently as well. Mm-hmm. Jack's got experience with that, so very interested in that. I mean, we talk about it a lot. The Creative Commons material out there is great, but wouldn't it be nice to have original material to work with all the time?
Bespoke audio. Do you like that? Do you know what bespoke means?
I think so, but I don't want to say in case I get it wrong.
It basically means when something is tailor-made to your needs rather than, like, off the peg, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, yeah, I believe you. Yeah, I learned it recently. I think it came up and the missus asked me what bespoke means, and I went, well, you see, it's... hang on, I'm just looking at my phone for a minute. Quickly get on the internet. But yes, that's right, it means tailor-made. Anyway, yeah, we'll talk a little bit about our own working with a composer, our own issues and our own successes as well. But why don't we get into the interview with Mr. JW?
Let's drive it forward and put it in gear and drop the clutch and roll down the window and pay the toll.
Sounds interesting.
I'm Jack Ward. I'm from Halifax, Nova Scotia. I'm a writer, producer, and actor of audio drama for... I guess 12 or 13 years by now. I've been running the Sonic Society, which is the weekly, longest growing weekly showcase of radio drama on the web and across Canada and the United States on selected stations, where we showcase radio drama from around the world. And I'm the CEO of Electric Vicuna Productions, where I write, produce, and act in original shows of a number of different kinds of genres. Not to mention, I helped develop things like the audio drama rating system, worked with some people to create the audio drama talk site, and I've got some pretty good groups on Facebook that describe and discuss radio drama. So I have a huge love for this medium.
Jack, welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. It's great to have you on.
Oh, it's great to be on. Thanks for asking, Matthew.
I'm glad that you're an experienced sort of interviewer and presenter, because I do have a really, really bad hangover today at the time of recording, so you're going to have to carry me a wee bit.
So, I'll try to talk quietly for you.
I'm in a dark room. So,
oh, that helps.
Good job it's not a video interview.
That's for sure. By the way, congratulations on that interview with Dirk Maggs. That's great. We've been talking, him and I, about doing an interview, and I just haven't gotten off my can to sit down and nail down a time with him. So that was a great one to listen to. And it's always great hearing Fiona, your last one, Fiona Thrale.
Yeah, it's been really good who we've been able to get on, and really enjoyable just to sit down on a weekly basis and chat to people. And I was saying to Fiona, kind of when you come to actually getting back to editing audio drama and you're speaking to all these people, drives you a bit mad because you've got so many ideas in your head, and it's quite hard to actually get something finished and, you know, be happy with it.
Well, and we're in a very strange time for audio drama right now, because we're seeing a huge growth of audio productions. There are a lot of people interested in audio production work, but not yet in audio drama itself. And it's kind of frustrating for people like me. And I say that because audiobooks have taken off. Sort of hybrid productions that aren't quite audiobooks but aren't kind of radio drama, like Serial and Welcome to Night Vale and stuff like that, have taken off. And yet audio drama is still languishing a little more than it should, in my opinion. And so that's because those other audio production groups or audio production types have taken off. We're finding a lot of great people like Fiona Thrale and even David, my co-host, doing a lot of great work in audiobooks, but that takes them away from doing the stuff that we love, being audio drama. So I don't know how we're going to fill the void, but I'm hoping that they'll come back and be able to spend more time too. I love Fiona's writing, and so I'm looking forward to seeing her shows come back when she has more time.
Do you think, Jack, I mean, you mentioned things like Serial and things like that, and podcasting has really taken off, and there's a real demand for storytelling content. And obviously, as audio dramatists, we want to provide that content. But do you think one of our big problems is actually because it takes so long to make audio drama, and now, you know, a lot of us, ourselves included, are thinking we want to do a series, but it's such a lot of work, it's very hard to get a consistent release schedule and, you know, get enough content out there to hold an audience for quite a long time. Do you think that's one of our big problems in the medium?
That's a good question. I mean, I think if you have people who love what you do, they'll be fine for taking a little longer to get it done. I don't think that's the thing that holds people back as much. I think you have to be consistent with your schedule. I think that's the number one thing people need. Like, I look at Greg Taylor, who started in podcasting as early as I did with Dakota Ring Theater, and he was doing a new show every other week for the longest. He was sometimes doing three shows a month for, you know, 8 years, and a year and a half ahead of himself. And then just recently, because he's also doing novels and comics, he's decided to move that down to once a month. I don't think it's hurt his base, because I think they know that if he says he's going to do something, it's going to be out when it's going to be out. I think what really hurts us is when people overpromise something and then it doesn't come out, and then people get frustrated waiting, and then they're gone.
What do you think the secret to getting stuff done is? I mean, what sort of things can you do in your sort of day-to-day life or your weekly life to make sure that you're actually getting through the work and getting out there?
Well, it's hard. I'm a full-time teacher, and I share parenting with my ex-wife, three boys. Teaching eats up so much of my time, and then it's a matter of how do I find the time to write and do the Sonic Society, which right now is in the 10th season, and I decided sort of arbitrarily to do three shows a week as opposed to one show a week, which is kind of nuts when you think about it. But I think that it's a matter of choices you're going to have to make, both in the amount of time you want to spend and the style of audio drama. One of the things that keeps Greg's production time down is he's gone for old-time radio feel, which means very little sound effects overall, very dialogue-driven stories, and that same kind, those same kind of beats. His stuff is he knows exactly when he needs to sort of break in Act One every time he's writing a script. So it's very clear for him. But for many people, myself included, and people from Broken Sea and the stuff that you guys do, there's a huge production time crunch that you put into. I was listening to The Cleansed with Frederick Greenhall recently, and his season two. And it's just, you know, you think, wow, so much production time has gone into this. No wonder it takes so long to produce it, because it's just, it's got to be clear and clean and just really natural.
Speaking of The Cleansed, and you know, it's relevant to what we've been up to recently, because we experimented with our very first sort of field recorded stuff the other week there. And it was, you know, a sort of day of recording, but when I sat down to edit the stuff, I was amazed at how quickly I could throw it together, you know, because a lot of the work is done in the recording stage. What's your thoughts on the sort of studio versus field debate, and, you know, in terms of how it sounds, what you prefer, and also, you know, how practical it is to get stuff done and out there?
I'm sort of an omnivore in all things in life. I tend to move towards the middle. I love all forms of those kinds of things. I think the general rule for me is the exact same thing as it is in teaching. I think it fits for most things in life. You're gonna pay for time one way or another. In teaching, if you spend 10 hours preparing your lesson, the amount of time it's going to take to correct whatever you achieve or all that kind of stuff is going to be so much faster. It's going to be done in such a it won't take nearly as long. But if your preparation time is cut because you don't have the time to produce the worksheets and what you need, you'll find that you'll spend a whole lot more time correcting the papers that they have in, because they won't be nearly as cleanly developed. And I think it's the same with audio drama. The more preparation time you put in, so that when you do go out, whether it's in the studio or outside, you're going to find that it's going to be a whole lot easier for you on the production side. Because if you prepare and say, okay, I'm going to shoot it in such a way that I can get these scenes done, and then I'm going to have them already organized in such a way, and the actors are already prepped for their lines, so we don't have to spend too much time stopping and starting because they know what they need to do. It really, it's how you want to do it preparation-wise, either get things done early or spend all the time on the other end.
Do you think as well, because, you know, a lot of people aren't just producing their shows, you know, recording and producing them, but writing them as well. Is that something that we might see a lot more producers outsourcing, as teaming up with a writer? And, you know, that takes the battle away from sitting down and actually creating a story and a script.
Yeah, I think you have to be careful with that, because I've seen writers, producers get together and really squabble over the direction of where they want the story to go. So you have to really partner with somebody who has the same vision. And I think you get good partnerships like Hidden Harbors, great partnership there with Jay Smith. And I forget the producer's name now, but
Brian.
Yes. Thank you. And Brian Lincoln. And they knew what they were getting into because they had worked together on a project before. I had to develop a really good relationship with Michael Stokes, and it took a couple, you know, it took a show or two just for him to understand the beats of my writing. But once we got that down, we were excited to do more because we understood where we were. And then, you know, you look on the other side of Scheme when you talk about writing, and you think of people like John Bell or Kyan Chris Conroy, who don't even write a script. They just have an idea. They sit down, do all the voices of their show, record them all sort of at the same time, and then have to go back and do massive amounts of editing and chopping and changing the speed of the way the line is delivered so you can have more of a comic effect. There's a lot of production that goes in there. I don't know how somebody could do what John Bell does with that sort of straightforward improv style and then take it and do the production side without almost pulling out their hair. You almost need to be able to be the person who does everything on that scale.
One of the things that sort of puts me off working with a writer is, and I don't know about you, Jack, but when I'm editing, I like the freedom to build the soundscape and put things, you know, try things and, you know, really build a world around the voices. And to me, it's quite off-putting, the thought that a script will say, you know, and here's where your footsteps are going, here's where your, you know, glass smashing sound effect goes and all this. I don't know if it would feel a bit rigid. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good, again, those tend to be really dependent. I've written for people in different companies where they want you to give as detailed sound effects as possible. And then I've written for others that say, no, just give us the script. Let us play with what we can do for the sound. Michael Stokes, for example, when I work with him, he really likes me having as much detailed information as possible for the sound effects, more detailed than I have, because I try to sort of give a basic idea of what I like. Also, when I work with Sharon B doing the composing, she wants me to sort of fill in where the music would go, and that almost pulled my hair, because I know when she does good work, and I have a general sense of how you should put something here, but I'm not clear enough yet to say, well, I really want this kind of music coming up in the middle of this scene because it's going to, you know, foreshadow what's coming next. It's interesting, too, because you can go to the other side, and I won't say which company, but it was this company that I worked for and wrote a script for, and the director of this company was really clear because they had done a sword fighting scene for a particular story, and somebody had given them a script, and he said that literally in the script there was about a page and a half of the word ting to describe what the sound effects were supposed to go. So you can imagine reading this script is ting, 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 as if that would be descriptive in any way, shape, or form as to what's happening in this story.
You mentioned music there, Jack, and one of the reasons for chatting today was I wanted to ask you about working with composers, because that's something that you've got experience with, isn't it?
Yeah, I've had a chance to work with a couple of composers, and I'm going to be working with the people from Oral Stage Studios. No, not Oral Stage, sorry, my mistake. Epic Audio. Oral Stage has worked with Epic before, and so I get them confused. Now, Epic Audio, which is my good friend Domin de Groot and Aline Hoskins on one of my shows, and they've offered to do some of the music for that. So it's really kind of exciting for me to work with a number of different composers that way.
I mean, this is certainly something that, you know, we've said that in the past on the podcast, that there is fantastic resources for Creative Commons music out there, you know, Kevin MacLeod and a few other sites, but the problem
John Carl Toth, for example, John Carl Toth has been doing a lot of music too.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is this stuff's great, but sometimes you just hear these songs in too many shows, and it kind of, you know, almost the suspension of disbelief could leave you for a second, because you're thinking, oh, I know that song. So working with a composer who's building music for your show, it helps it to be more unique, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's even the same with the Stings. I can't tell you how many times I've heard sort of the news theme from the Apple software GarageBand show up on somebody's show, and I'm like, oh, well, there's that same news theme again. And even that little thing can throw you right off. Yeah.
So what's the process then? Do you send a completed scene to the composer and allow him to compose the music around it? Or do you tell him, you know, what you're looking for in advance, and he'll maybe send you some stuff just going by the mood of the story? What's involved?
Well, I've done a little bit of both. I can speak specifically about Sharon B because I've worked the most with her over the years, and we have an interview with her on Sonic Speaks because so many of my listeners have said, can you please get an interview with Sharon B? Because she's sort of like the silent partner to your shows for so many years and nobody knows what she sounds like. So I'll get on the phone with Sharon and I'll say, look, I want to write a pirate series. And she'll go, okay. And I'll say, and this is the kind of thing I'm looking for in the theme. And I might send her some theme songs from different shows and say, but no, I want this sort of be a little more bouncy or something like that. And so we usually start that way. We start with the idea of a theme because when you have the theme that sort of is what drives the show as the very beginning, it helps Sharon to come up with ideas to sort of base mood music upon the style and the mood of the theme. So she can take parts of the theme and then draw it out with sort of background mood music. And that was a real learning experience for Sharon. I think some of her best mood music was stuff that we used in The Deadline or in Wavefront. And if you're interested, I'm happy to send examples of all this stuff that I'm talking about. So you can hear the pirate theme that we came up with at the end, as well as an example of some of the mood music that might be worthwhile for your listeners to hear.
If you were to advise, if an aspiring producer or a new producer was thinking ahead to maybe working with a composer, I mean, not many people are making money out of audio drama.
Right.
We never like to just say to someone if they could work for free, that old chestnut for the exposure or whatever. What's the way around it, is it more a dual ownership thing of the project, do you think, when you're getting someone on board and you're not able to properly pay them?
Yeah, no, Sharon and I talk about this in a long time, and she's very generous because we've been friends for so long. But we've made it also very clear, like we put it out in contract that, should certain productions that I'm making get sold in any way, a percentage of that will go to her. And she owns the music outright and gives me, sort of this sort of consistent use for the shows itself, so that the music is not mine, it is hers, and she has a right to sort of give it, royalty free or whatever she wants to do to anybody else if she sees fit. And I'm just grateful that she puts so much time, so much effort, and so much love into the works that she does. She really enjoys it as well. And yeah, you know what, it is, we can always say that it is about the exposure, but I think one of the great powers of radio drama at this time for all of us is it really works of developing skills that we wouldn't normally do. So Sharon has done, for example, music for stage plays. And so she's created entire musicals and worked with things like that. But she's explained or expressed some real fascination with doing the audio dramas because she can see her utilizing the experience that she's had through this to be able to take it to movies, for example. And I know as a writer, I'm so grateful for my listeners and so grateful for any fans of my writing because it continually pushes me to keep coming back and to keep honing my craft. And so audio drama has been fantastic for that.
One of the ideas I'd mentioned on the Facebook group, on the podcast Facebook group, and I don't know how practical it would be. It might be a load of nonsense, but I was just sort of speculating that, I'd be willing to pay, say, £5-10 a month to know that I had a composer when I needed one. And I was saying, if a group of producers, however big or small, did the same, it's almost like maybe having a house producer, if you like, a composer. So when you needed the music, you knew that that person was there and you knew that you were at least contributing something to them. But I don't know how practical that would be. I mean, certainly if 10 people suddenly needed a track done 1 month, that might be a problem.
I think that's a brilliant idea. And I would be willing to absolutely, if anybody wants to do that, because I'm not saying Sharon is hard up for money in any way, shape or form, but that would be a really cool thing to be able to come to her and say, okay, Sharon, I've got five different companies that want to be able to use your work. I think the only trick that we have is that whoever pays this on a monthly basis has to be able to come up with a time frame so that you give her the time to be able to come back and produce it. You don't want to say, well, you know, I'd like it next week.
Yeah.
that's not realistic. But if you sit there and, you know, a couple of months ahead, you say, okay, we spent the time, this is when our release date is. And that way, I think it would work too if you looked at it and said, okay, I want to include Sharon in all in the aspects of the creation of this. So I want to have these milestones beginning 3 months or 6 months out so that she can look at the script and give me some suggestions about what kind of music might be good. So that by the time, you know, 4 months is out, she maybe has a theme ready for me. By the time 3 months is out or 2 months, 2 or 3 months is out, I can give her the show at least rough edited so that she can hear the pacing of the characters to come up with mood music in the background. You know, giving that kind of lead time would be really, really helpful for any composer. And I guess I'm speaking for Sharon, but I think if I were doing that, I would certainly appreciate that as well.
I suppose as well, if people find themselves they're struggling to get things done and they know that they're paying for a service on a monthly basis, it might encourage them to actually, you know, get things finished, because they're thinking, well, if I go a year without using the composer, that could be a wee bit of money that they've not used.
That's amazing. What a great idea, Matthew. I love that. I hope you don't mind if I float that around more with people, because
no, not at all.
I think that would be a great little pilot project to do, and I think you're absolutely right. Anything that we can do as writers and producers that keep forcing us towards a deadline will help keep that discipline going to get those shows out there.
Just a wee change of subject here, something that sort of came to me in the wider aspects of audio drama, and you've been doing the Sonic Society for a long time. You also teach as well. With podcasting getting more and more sort of mainstream, how do you go about, you know, we've all had that question, what is an audio drama? How do you sort of go about explaining that to people when they ask?
I try to keep it as simple as possible by saying it's a movie without pictures. And then you watch their eyes sort of glaze over for a minute. But you give them that image to start off with. And then you say, can you imagine if you were listening, instead of listening to music, but you're walking down the street and you're listening to your favorite movie. And it's written in such a way that you always know what's going on, because every sound effect just sort of adds to the story and the excitement. So it doesn't matter if you're listening to a zombie epic or something in science fiction or a comedy. Wouldn't that be really awesome to be able to just jump in your car every day that you have to drive to work and spend 25 minutes of that boring drive listening to the exact same music from top 10, you know, radio stations? How about if you sat there and had a movie to listen to come back and forth from home? Wouldn't that make the drive, especially in the snow we've got right now, so much better?
It's always good as well, I find, you know, when you sort of refer people to some of the, I mean, I always send people immediately to something like We're Alive, because it, you know, it's so well made and there's so much content.
For sure.
And you know that if you could kind of get them hooked on that, then you could start adding other things in. But it's great to have a show like that, you know, that you can really refer people to start them out.
Absolutely. And I, you know, when I, if I don't know what the person's preference are, I do send them to Sonic Society or Radio Drama Revival. I'll often send them to both and say, look, one of the great things about our show is that it's so eclectic. You may not like what's going on this week, but you may love next week. So if you take a look at the list, go and listen to something that tickles your fancy. But if you're right, and I know the person pretty well, and I go, oh, this guy loves zombies. You really love zombies? Try this out. And I'll send them to We're Alive or HG World, and I've got a lot of students hooked that way, where I go, oh, you really love Doctor Who? Have you ever listened to any Doctor Who audio dramas? And they're like, no, what's that? And then, blam, that's all it takes.
Are there Doctor Who audio dramas? I've not came across any.
Oh, they're everywhere, my friend. Everywhere. Holy crap. Yes, everybody's doing a Doctor Who audio drama. Heck, I've done some 5-minute sort of short, funny Doctor Who kind of things for just for the Sonic Society. I think it's just something everybody adores, so everybody loves to do. I think for me, as an enthusiast of this art form, I'm looking for every way that I can get more content out there from the people who make it and more people with ears who have never heard it before. Like this month, I set up my own sort of little NaNoWriMo style script writing month. This month happens to be the script writing month for audio drama. I don't know if you knew that. I call it NADSRIM, National Audio Drama Script Writing Month. So, the idea, and you can go to the Sonic Society and check it out. There's a little page for it. And it's just a suggestion to get people to write series or long features or small series with, lots of opportunities just to get people through the month of February, which tends to be pretty dreary in North America for a lot of people. And also happens to be my birthday. So if people can write series and finish them in February, then I feel like it's a birthday present to me.
Jack, you've been in the game a long time. We've only been producing and listening for, 3-4 years now. Have you noticed an upswing in new producers and new people coming into the medium the last few years?
Absolutely. It's something that I floated about 2 or 3 years ago, and it got a lot of controversy at the time because of what people suggest, but I said the golden age of modern radio drama is over. We're now in the silver age. And people think silver age is like not as good, but I think that we've reached a moment in the modern audio drama that there are people making audio drama now, not based on the stuff necessarily that they heard in old time radio or even in the 80s with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the Star Wars audio drama, but people are making audio drama based upon listening to modern audio drama made just 3 or 4 or 5 years ago and going, wow, I love this stuff. I got to make my own. And so when you have like a second generation basically coming up of people going, wow, this is really great. I got to make this stuff. I think we've entered a new age. And we see a lot of those old time people who started off audio drama back in the day like I did and Jeffrey Adams and Greg Taylor and the people at Darker Projects and Pendant Audio, all those people who started off a long, long time ago, many people have left, but there are people who are going, listening to things like Pendant and going, yeah, I got to make my own series. For example, The Table Round. I just interviewed Morgan Seward from The Table Round, and the reason why he wrote this entire big King Arthur epic is because of listening to my show that I did a long time ago, which is a fan fiction of Firefly, the television show, and some of my other shows, as well as Pendant. He was just so thrilled with that. He said, what can I do? I love King Arthur. I want to make that series.
I wonder if we'll see, something we see in other types of technology, like people could develop apps now, even though they don't know anything about building apps. People could create computer games without knowing how to program or code because everything's been simplified for a mass audience. I wonder if we'll see something similar in audio in the future and if people will be able to create dramas without necessarily being able to work Pro Tools or Adobe Audition or DAWs, things like that.
Yeah, David Farquhar is from Moonlight Audio, has been a pioneer in that area because he sort of sat there and said, look, I noticed people are using their phones far more. So he started off with creating a BlackBerry network of Moonlight Audio, which is tended to be sort of like the best of the best of things like the Sonic Society and Radio Drama Revival. I mean, I make no bones. Sonic Society is an absolute commons style showcase. I wanted to bring everybody to the table, whether they're super polished and fantastic or they're brand new and sounding a little, experimental and rough, because I just wanted to bring people out and have people grow. And whether it's something that is my thing or not is not my main reason for bringing stuff to the Sonic Society. And I know that Fred's great show, Radio Drama Revival, and I feel really proud because Fred is one of the guys that he started off in Sonic Society with his with one of his shows, and so it's great to see him do amazing stuff out there. And his stuff, it tends to be like some of the best out there of really polished radio drama stuff. And so then to see Moonlight Audio go, I want to take that kind of really great stuff and bring it to this whole new market of cell phones and such. And he wants, you know, David Farquhar wants Moonlight Audio to be sort of the Netflix of radio drama. And I think he's got something there, because he's got some free stuff, but he's also gone to some of the amazing companies, things like the Radio Company of America, Colonial Radio Theater, Jim French Productions, all these great companies that sell their productions, and he's made deals with them so that people can listen to them if they become sort of a premier member of Moonlight Audio.
Just before we sort of wrap up, Jack, what advice have you got for people that are just getting into this medium now? Maybe they're just producing their very first shows, or maybe they've not even started that yet. They're just looking ahead to it. What's your advice for them?
I think there's a number of things you should do. The first thing you should do is ask yourself, what do I want to do? I mean, don't start off. There's a lot of people that want to monetize, and that's great. But I think if you're just starting off, start off with something that you love so that you really figure out if this is something that you want to do, because it will try. It is trying. It is exhausting. It takes up a lot of your energy. And if you have that passion because you love the subject matter and you love your story, that will get you through a lot of the low times. The second thing is to sort of try to listen to and get as much advice from people who have done this before, because it can help, you know, shorten the track a bit for you when you're doing this long race. So listen to a lot of shows. Listen to, you know, the audio drama production podcast, for example. You got some great advice and super guests that really help people get a shortcut into doing this kind of development. Make sure you have the right tools. I mean, I helped develop the audio drama script writing section in Celtics back in the day, because I wanted a software product that everybody could use and everybody could share. So Celtics was, at the time, was free for anyone to use. And I went to them and said, look, you don't have an audio script writing section. Can we develop one? And we did, so that I could go back and say, it doesn't matter if you're using a Mac, it doesn't matter if you're using Linux or Microsoft Windows, we can all share and work together in a script writing focus. So that's a great writing tool. Being able to find an audio tool that you can do the production side and do the editing that works well with you. Get a good microphone, or at least get good people who are satellite actors that can help you produce that stuff. All those things are really important. And take your time, but give yourself a deadline. It's got to be out by a certain thing. And not just, you know, don't just give yourself a deadline. Tell everybody about that deadline. Because the more you get people expecting it, the more that pressure is going to happen to make you sure that you get it done.
So what are you up to at the moment, Jack? What you got to promote? Any releases in the pipeline?
Yeah, this is where you're going to put me on the hot seat to make sure I get my stuff done. I'm decided recently with David that we're moving. This will be the last season of our sort of mini audio drama introductions for the Sonic Society. It's been fun, but it takes up a lot of my writing time and a lot of my energy. And of course, we're going to move back down to a single show a week starting with season 11. However, I've been recently thinking that I might keep up the interviews maybe once a month, because people have told me that's a real valuable commodity for them. So that allows me more time to write for Electric Vicuna. And I'm going to be releasing my favorite original series that I've been holding on to for a long time, called Spaceways, The Adventures of Biff Straker, which is a reboot of a series that I started about 20 years ago, one of my first radio dramas I ever wrote. And so that's going to come in season 11. I'm deciding I think that it'll be released as an extra episode on the Sonic Society feed. So for those people who are anxious for Biff, that's working. I'm also working, like I said, with Audio Epics to do Flight of the Airmen, which is my World War I fantasy air epic. So that's a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to having that out soon. That'll be next year, depending upon how much time they need to put music all together as well, but hopefully before Christmas, maybe. That would be really cool. And of course, I'm still writing anthology series for my science fiction anthology Wavefront, and I'll be releasing those usually once every 3 months. I've got a new show out for that.
Thank you very much to Mr. Jack Ward from the Sonic Society. Some interesting stuff there as usual from him.
Do you not think it was funny that Jack said that he'd just heard our Dirk Maggs interview, and yesterday, at the time of recording, I had just heard his Dirk Maggs interview driving up to Dundee. Listened to that, really good. Great to hear from the man again. So, funny how things come around. But
yeah,
it's a non-interesting fact.
It's almost like, you know, when all the different TV chat shows where you'll see the same actors, you'll never see them for ages, and then suddenly they're on three or four shows in a row within a space of 2 days. It's like, oh, right, you've got a film out. Fair enough. So it makes me think, what's Dirk promoting? You know, because what was the one? The Terry Pratchett one. The Good Omens. That's already been out at Christmas. So
yeah, because it was definitely Dirk that chased us down to get on this show.
That's right. Yeah. So it was a good interview, of course, as usual. So some interesting stuff. Do you want to talk a bit about that, or working with a composer?
Well, limited time, obviously. It's a fair size interview, so I want to move on fairly quickly. Was there anything you wanted to add, you know, in terms of our own experience working with the composers, anything like that?
Yeah, you know, we've had some successes for getting stuff from the usual places, like in Compotech.com, but there's our old pal Tom Cusack from, what's the company name these days? Is it Leafy Lane?
Leafy Lane. He seems to change it a lot, but Leafy Lane, I think, last time I checked, formerly Free Music for Videos.
Yeah.
Also, new composer on the scene for us, Martin Mathney, who worked on Time is Money, did a great job, and definitely want to work with Martin again as well.
Yeah.
Found him, of course, through our old pal Doug, the Shinty fan.
Oh, yes, of course. And I would say, for a lot of audio drama, get the stuff that you want from Incompetech and the likes, but there might be the odd one or two bits of audio where you want something special, and it's worth, you know, putting a couple of quid or dollars or whatever somebody's way, somebody like Tom or Doug, did you say his name was?
Yeah.
No,
Doug.
Doug's
Shinty, Martin's Music. That's how when the three of us are sitting in the pub, that's how I kind of, you know, keep the conversation flowing. How's the Shinty, Doug? How's the music, Martin? Anyone want a pint? It's your round.
Fabulous. Crisps for me. So I would say that we enjoyed some success getting Tom to do the Aftermath theme, because, you know, that was our big series, that was our big long-running thing, and we didn't just use music that anyone could use, that's our theme, we paid him for it, so that's my 2 pence worth.
What a 2 pence worth it was.
Yeah.
A wee bit of correspondence to get through. Have you got a copy in front of you over there where you are?
I do indeed. Would you want me to rattle it off?
Yeah, get tore in. We'll see what the first one is.
J.D. Sutter. He's got something to say. He says, "Hey guys, absolutely loving the show." He really is saying that. "I really enjoyed the interview with Lawrence." That's Lawrence Raw, great audio drama reviewer. "As a critical reviewer for over 5 years myself, I thought he brought out some really great points. Thanks for the informative show." So that's good, eh?
Yeah, thank you, JD. And good. Does that count as a critical review for us? Because he says that he loves the show and he reviews critically. So that means we're actually all right. Is that fair? Is that a bit of a leap?
I'm taking it as a thumbs up, certainly.
Good. Jarrett got in touch. You want me to read that?
I think you should.
He says, "Hi, your podcast is great. I'm beginning to set up for my own dramatisation, a superhero serial. Where is a good place to find voice actors to record remotely when you're just starting out and have no budget? I could answer that, actually. Audio Drama Talk. Type that into the old Google machine, Audio Drama Talk, and there's a wee section on there called Casting Call, and you'll get a lot of people that will audition for you on there. There's also voice acting forums out there as well. The Voice Actors Alliance, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And the Facebook groups as well. The Radio Drama / Audio Drama Lovers Facebook group. There's loads of people on there, so you probably get a bit of luck on there as well. And our own wee Facebook group, there's a few great voice actors on there. So plenty of options. Hopefully you could run with one of them.
Absolutely. I would say worst case scenario, just chuck a link, a post in our Facebook forum, and I'm sure a ton of us will jump on it because we all like superheroes, don't we?
Yeah, superheroes are brilliant. Yeah, they're super. But yeah, thanks so much, Jarrett, for getting in touch. He says thanks again for the great show. So great to hear from you. Indeed, I must point out as well, JD was the first person to email the new email address, which is podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. Jarrett's email was in the old inbox, but we could forgive that because he might have been listening to back episodes.
And that's right.
Of course, they're all in there as that email address. Email from our old pal Paul in Australia. You want to have a look at that one, Robert?
I do, and I'm not going to do the accent because I find that offensive. He says, "Hey guys, I'm a huge fan of panning when it's done well. How a producer uses panning in a production depends a lot on their personal preference and the feel they want the production to have. There are three main guidelines I think should be taken into consideration when it comes to using panning in a production. One, keep the main action close to the center of the stereo field. More than anything, this is so that people listening in a car or on a mono audio system aren't disadvantaged by the use of panning. This isn't to say that all the main action should be dead centre, but I'd say keeping it within the middle third of the stereo field is a reasonable starting point."
Can I just butt in there to agree with Paul? Because, you know, I think you're the same, Robert, but we edit on headphones all the time, and it was always very easy to pan stuff because it feels like the furthest, you know, no matter how far you pan out, it's only reaching one shoulder to the other shoulder, if that makes any sense. You know, your perspective, how you envisage the audio as a picture.
Yeah.
But if you had two monitors set up on either corner of the room, and in the past, you know, we've been guilty of maybe panning something. Say, a good example is maybe the sound of someone moving in their chair in your right ear and reaching over. Say there was a bowl of crisps. So in our head, it wouldn't be, it wouldn't sound stupid for him to reach over to the left ear and fumble about for some crisps. But if you took that recording and played it over where you had a monitor on either side of the room, you know, unless he's like Inspector Gadget with a big, huge arm, then it just...
Dalsim from Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, then it just sounds ridiculous. And of course, most of your listeners will probably hear it through headphones and it's fine, but like Paul says, you really have to cater for a bit more than that because people are consuming in all sorts of different ways. So play it safe. Don't be too extreme with the panning. But yeah, sorry for interrupting. I just thought I'd chip in there.
Not at all, because I was also going to add, there are audio series like Edict Zero. I don't know if I've mentioned Edict Zero before, by Jack Kincaid, Slipgate 9 Productions. You know, he does a lot of panning as well. And if you can imagine you're driving in the car because you do a lot of your listening in the car, you do a lot of commuting, then a lot of the intricacies can be lost. Jack always says the best experience is through headphones, but you might not be able to. You might have to drive, you know. So it's a good bit of advice to keep it fairly centre and not go too far off. And that way you'll be catering for everyone. So there you go. Will I do point two?
Yeah, back to Paul.
Yeah. Appropriately pan effects relative to the position of character voices. Doing this reduces listener confusion and helps the listener to visualize the action. Some production styles might call for centered voices with a lot of the effects being panned. For instance, a hybrid modern audio and old radio style drama. But the position of a character's voice should not be in conflict with the position of the sounds they make, like footsteps. If you pan character voices, pan everything else appropriately. There's no point going to the trouble of panning character voices if you're going to yank the listener out of your story with an effect in a strange or impossible place. For instance, an opening car door panned centre when both characters are in the car panned to either side of centre. I will add, yeah, the last episode of Aftermath that we did, we had to be careful that when we were panning, we had like three or four people in a car at one point. We made sure two were on one side, two were on the other. And we were careful to make sure that when they were getting out of a door, that door was on the same side as them. Not the other side, not in the centre, the same side, because otherwise you get confused. Would you agree?
Yeah, and just another wee point, it's maybe a bit off topic here, but I think to consider as well is when you're panning characters who are both driving in a car, be sensitive to what side of the car they're going to, you know, if it's a British car, they're obviously going to be sitting on the right if they're driving. So if you've got someone driving in the UK in your drama and they're obviously the driver, they're talking about driving, etc., but they're on the left, you know, it's a tiny detail, but sometimes attention to detail goes a long way. So just be wary of that. Also, obviously, the vice versa is true if you're out in the States or somewhere else where they drive on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, so detail is everything. And point three, the movement of a character across the stereo field should be audible. If a character moves from one place to another without some kind of sound indicating the movement sounds sudden and unnatural. Some rare occasions do call for sudden movements without an audible sound, like moving suddenly from one place to another with magic, but even these can sound better with the creative use of an effect, or to make them sound intentional rather than accidental. In general, panning for characters in a studio production should be minimized when they're only changing their posture, like bending, sitting, etc., because it would likely sound more unnatural than keeping the character's position in the stereo field constant for these actions.
Yeah, that's a point that the first point here came up. I think it was in Richard Hand's Radio Drama Handbook. It was either that or one of the other books I've read recently, but they were talking about the crouching tiger effect from the old Bruce Lee films where, you know, the character would be talking from one dark corner of the room and then suddenly he's behind you. Obviously that was demonstrating something, that he was a very stealthy ninja, and most of your characters probably aren't stealthy ninjas, and therefore, as Paul said, if they're going to move about the room, make it obvious. And I think as well, Dirk Maggs had brought this up, but he likes to get a bit of movement, even if he's in the studio. Natural movement's a lot easier than trying to manage it in post-production with completely stationary voices. So,
yeah, like, if you're on the phone to someone and they are moving, you can tell that they're moving. You know, you're like, are you walking somewhere? Yeah, why? Oh, I can just tell, you know? And a lot of the old purists will say that footsteps are often overdone, that you don't need footsteps to point out that somebody's moving. I would say, going back to point two there about making it obvious, it doesn't have to be footsteps. You could, for instance, and I'm going to take my headphones off slightly here, you could make it that it's obvious that you're moving away because, like, you're still talking while you're doing it and your voice is carrying, and therefore you can tell by the way they're moving away. And then here they come back again, here they come back, and they're coming back to the microphone. If they're not going to be constantly talking while they're moving, then yes, that's when you would have the odd chair bump and, you know, footsteps and stuff.
There you go then, back to Paul.
Yes. While most people probably do listen in situations where stereo effects are lost, that's no reason to punish listeners who listen on headphones with an underused stereo field. A well-used stereo field can give the listener extra information about a scene's environment that just isn't possible using mono. What kind of thing do you think would be lost by using mono? You mean like something happening outside or somebody coming from one side or the other, if it's important?
Well, think about a car driving past in mono. You're not really going to get as good a sound, are you, as natural a sound.
Yeah, I suppose.
So things like that, things that, you know, things that have a lot of movement, when you're reducing them to mono, you're going to lose some of that. So, but you know,
not to a huge effect. You can still tell that something came close and went away again, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there is that added 3D effect by using stereo. So, yeah, don't punish the stereo users just because some of them might not be using it, I guess. Yeah, right enough. Okay, last paragraph. Finally, I think we need to remember that audio dramas are not movies. In movies, dialogue is centered as a general rule because it would sound unnatural if it wasn't coming from the screen, front center. But in that situation where there are visual cues that help with the localization of characters, but in audio drama there are no visual cues, so we need to provide localization cues with panning and volume, while also paying more attention to reverb and filters to provide environmental cues. I can't count how many times I've heard acoustically transparent cars in audio drama. And he finishes by saying, thanks for the podcast, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah. No, and that is true. It's something I've noticed. I've watched a few things recently and been thinking with my audio guys head on, listening to the dialogue. And a lot of the times the dialogue is actually really, really sparse. And I'm thinking, wow, they're not talking much. And I realize they don't need to, because the stuff on screen, the body language, the environment, and so on, is telling 90% of the tale. But obviously, you can't get that in audio drama, so you do need to have more dialogue. And the man himself, Jack Kincaid, said that you do get away with a little bit of exposition, because the characters have to talk to each other to get the story out there, because they don't have the benefit of the visual aid. So, just a little bit to go along with that there. So, yeah, thanks for that, Paul.
Thanks very much, Paul. Great to hear from you again. And finally, reaching into the old metaphorical postbag, an email from our friend Owen McEwen, the Voices man. He says, another great interview, of course. I wish the interview segments could be even longer. We're not bored, trust me. Lots of great info to be had there. Yeah, Owen also says in his email that he might be buying a Zoom recorder through the affiliate links in the equipment section on audiodramaproduction.com. Thanks very much, Owen, for considering it, because we do earn a very small commission on anything bought through these links. There's amazon.com and .co.uk links up there. And it's just another wee way that people can sort of support the show and keep us running, if they're ever buying any equipment, is to go through these links.
Fabulous.
So they are up there.
So just to make it clear then, if somebody wants to maybe buy some equipment, they know they're probably going to get it from Amazon, if they just go to audiodramaproduction.com and follow the link from there. Yeah,
you just go to I think it's audiodramaproduction.com/equipment, I think. There's also /books, and there's a lot of great books there. All stuff that we've read and used ourselves, and the equipment stuff that we have either used or would like to use. Can't afford it all, can't buy it all, but yeah, it's up there. So check it out if you're in the market for anything.
Excellent.
I've got a coat on with watches inside it. You know, one of those watch salesmen. But
Rolex.
Yeah. Another way you can support us as well is on Patreon. If you can get on there, patreon.com, I think it is. I should really have links in front of me when I do the podcast, but it's in the show notes. You get on Patreon, and if you're able to pledge maybe a dollar an episode, that would be a huge, huge help for us on our way to sustainability.
Mm-hmm. Just covering the costs. Yeah, we're not financing Rolls Royces from this or anything, are we?
And if you have no money at all, and you know some of us don't, you can give us a wee sort of thumbs up by getting on iTunes and giving us a rating and review. It really helps, and the more ratings and reviews we get, apparently, I'm not an Apple expert, but apparently the more you get, the higher up the rankings the podcast goes. I've never seen rankings myself on iTunes, but they must exist. I don't spend a lot of time on there, though. But
yeah.
It's always nice to see a wee review there, so anything that goes up would be much appreciated.
Absolutely, and it's good to know what we're doing well, what we could do better, opinions, constructive criticism, send it all our way. And as Matthew said, the new and current email address is podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss this week?
No, I think that's it. We've went on a wee bit, but hopefully the listeners enjoy that. There's been a lot of stuff in there, good interview and a couple of good emails as well. Just catching up on a lot of stuff this week. I was down in Yorkshire at the weekend with a wife, and Whitby, North Yorkshire, it's on the coast. Lovely wee town, been there loads of times. Actually, the big influence behind Bram Stoker writing Dracula back in the day. I think he might have wrote part of Dracula there.
I believe so. And do you know what else happened in Whitby?
Scampi, decent scampi, 47 pubs.
Me and my dad had ice cream there 4 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. Did you did you walk over the bridge that opens to let boats in?
No. We were on our way a bit further south. We just stopped off for 10 minutes because it's Whitby and famous and that. We had a look at the old castle on the hill that was also the influence for what's his name with the teeth. So, yeah, we were in and out, basically. We had to get out of there before it was dark, obviously, because you hear things, don't you?
Yeah, those the Yorkshire vampires are notorious for taking a bit more blood than your average vampire. So,
yeah. Trouble at castle. Anyway. Right, I guess that will do us. Please get in touch because we love to hear from you all. And if there's anything you want to see on next week's podcast, anything to be discussed, then drop us a line or get us on the Facebook group. And if not, we'll just catch you next week.
Yeah, have a really, really nice week and enjoy yourself. And I'm not going to mention cereal this week because I think I do that every week and it's a bit weird. So cheerio.
Cheerio for now.